Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Sales of new homes jumped 27% from February to March. Home prices in San Francisco, Dallas, and Boston are up. You can read glimmers of hope in the U.S. housing market. But a big tax credit for home buyers expired Friday. Interest rates won't stay this low forever. Many regions' markets still struggle. And a huge overhang of foreclosures has yet to wash through. So, is this a comeback, or could it all crunch down again and lower? This hour on Point After the Bloodbath, we're sizing up the U.S. housing market. You can join the conversation. What do you see? Comeback, a bottom, or more woe ahead? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In this hour, we will hear bullish and bearish views on the housing market. Joining me first from Pittsburgh is James Haggerty. He's an editor at the Wall Street Journal, where he covers the national housing and mortgage markets. James Haggerty, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Give us a sense of the numbers, Jim. We've been hearing, you know, headline snippets here and there that could get you all excited in one direction or another. Walk us through some of the big numbers that are out there right now and what they mean.
Yeah, well, probably we should just ignore a lot of these month-to-month headlines, because the housing market does bounce around a lot, and these headlines involve national numbers, which are an average of things happening all over. Parts of the market are getting stronger, parts are getting weaker, and we really should try to focus on the longer-term trend.
Well, we want to go to that trend, but help us understand, for example, when they say new home sales up 27%, that seems like a big deal. Why might it not be, or is it?
Well, one reason it's probably not a big deal is that those new home sales are reported by the U.S. Census Bureau. They're based on a tiny sample, and there's a huge margin of error in their month-to-month numbers. So the headlines can be quite misleading. Nonetheless, it is pretty clear that in recent months, there has been some boost to home sales from this tax credit, which people had to close on their homes, or they had to be under contract on their homes by Friday in order to qualify. So there was a bit of a rush to get under contract.
So there was an $8,000 bump there for first-time home buyers, and something for others as well. We see realtors quoted saying last week, you know, it's just crazy as people tried to rush to get in on that. That's now over. Some of those deals will still wrap up, but that's not there any longer. And we also saw here from the Case-Shiller Index, and we'll talk with the economist Shiller in this hour. But here's another, you know, lead from just a couple of weeks ago, less than a week ago. Houses in 20 major U.S. cities were worth more in February 2010 than in February 2009, for the first time in more than 3 years. Values had increased year to year. Is that a big deal, Jim?
Well, values have more or less leveled off a bit. I mean, some months they're up slightly, some months they're down slightly. This is on average. After falling about 30% on average between 2006 and about the middle of last year, prices generally are flattening out. They'll bounce around a little bit up, a little bit down. The big question is whether we're going to see another troublesome drop ahead, or whether the market will continue to level out and eventually start to recover a bit.
We've got new numbers out today, and I see here how the realtors are interpreting that. Here's the National Association of Realtors saying a surge of home sales is unfolding for the first for the spring home buying season. Of course, they have an interest in that. What are the numbers today, James?
Well, the pending home sales came out for March, and they were up 5% from a month earlier. So that's another sign that there was some effect from this tax credit. I don't think it was a huge, overwhelming effect, but it did boost sales a bit. And probably in the months ahead, we're going to see some payback from that, because this tax credit accelerated some purchases that otherwise would have happened later in the year. But I think in the long term, this tax credit is going to be only a blip in the sales trend. And what we really have to look at are the more fundamental factors, like what's happening with employment and what's happening with all of these foreclosures.
What about foreclosures? Where does that stand now? A couple of million, I think, last year, and projections of almost that many again this year, and another more than a million, maybe Moody'sEconomy.com says, in 2011. How big a deal is that? Could that turn the whole thing around?
Well, it depends a lot on how fast this happens. Right now, the foreclosure process is moving along very slowly because banks are under pressure to try to help people avoid foreclosure. That's a very time-consuming process. And so foreclosed homes have been hitting the market at a fairly slow rate, slow and steady. If that continues, that will make it easier to absorb. But there is a frightening number of people who are in trouble on their mortgages. About 8 million households are at least 30 days overdue or already in the foreclosure process. That's around 15% of all households with a mortgage. So that's a lot of people whose problems still have to be resolved. And how those problems are resolved will have a big effect on how the housing market performs.
And what about regionally, James Haggerty? Give us a sense of who's doing well, who's not, and the whys behind that.
All right. Well, we recently put together a table that looked at two of the biggest drivers of the housing market right now. One is the state of employment in individual metro areas, and the other is the percentage of homeowners who are behind on their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And in these two categories, some of the cities that or metro areas that did the worst were Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Las Vegas, Orlando, Tampa, Jacksonville.
So in other words, if you've got high unemployment and an awful lot of people behind on their mortgages or in foreclosure, this is not a good recipe for home prices.
That's right. Although there are going to be some neighborhoods in those areas that are probably doing very well because they're quite desirable and people are snapping up bargains. But in general, those areas are going to be weaker because they do have fairly weak job situations. If you don't have a job, you're probably not going to buy a house. And they do have a lot of foreclosures looming.
I'm looking in the middle of your chart. You've got Phoenix, Atlanta, Chicago, L.A., Charlotte, North Carolina, kind of in the middle here. And what about lower unemployment and fewer overdue mortgages?
Well, some of the ones that did the best were Minneapolis-St. Paul, Denver, and Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Federal government continues to be a very reliable source of jobs.
So on the bottoming out front, where do you come down? Have we bottomed out, or people talk about it dropping down another leg, not just, you know, not bottomed out, but the chance that it can actually drop again?
Well, I think the general expectation is that we are bouncing along the bottom, but it's going to be a very long bottom, most likely. It's going to be a very slow recovery, and it will be bumpy. One month will look like things are better. The next month will look like things are worse. There is, though, the risk that the market could take another lurch downward if the economy really weakens again, or if the banks start foreclosing a lot faster and that just overwhelms the market in some areas. But I think it's most likely that this foreclosure process is going to proceed quite slowly because politicians don't want to see millions of people pushed out on the street from month to month.
And they interest rates, James, how does that come in here? They've been at historic lows on mortgages for a long time. Some of the background to that is changing.
Yes, rates are still very low, near 5% on average. The general expectation is that rates probably will go up, but there's a lot of disagreement over how much they'll go up. Some economists think they're just going to go up very modestly over the rest of this year. You know, maybe to 5.2, 5.3%. Others are saying, no, it'll probably go up to 6% by the end of the year. Really, nobody knows. But that again, is going to depend on what's happening with the economy.
We're looking to bulls and bears in this hour on the U.S. housing market. We've been talking with James Haggerty, covers real estate and mortgages for the Wall Street Journal. James, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
In a moment, we will hear from Robert Shiller, the Yale economist who co-authors the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. But joining me first from Philadelphia, Susan Wachter, professor of finance and real estate at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Susan Wachter, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Tom.
Now, everybody's got cautions here, but I think you're kind of in our bull seat today, excuse me, that perhaps we're over the worst of it in the housing market. What do you see, Susan?
We are clearly over the worst of it. how much of a bull I can be in this environment is not overly bullish, but we're on a path to stabilization. At least we're stabilizing, and we're likely in the beginning of a recovery. I think this is what the most optimistic view of it can be. But nonetheless, I think it's a pretty solid base that we're forming now in the housing market, and it is, in fact, due to the fundamentals, which are also performing actually in a way that will support a recovering housing market.
What are the bricks in that base? What are the fundamentals that have you thinking that the housing market may have at last stabilized?
The fundamentals include employment growth, albeit, of course, we have a very high unemployment rate, and it's a very slow process of eating into that unemployment rate. But we do have employment growth. We do have an extremely low interest rate environment, and that is key for the actual recovery of the housing market. We also have federal stimulus, which is still out there and is going strong and is going to add more demand to this market. Households' balance sheets are improving, again, slowly, but they're improving. And in fact, the diminishing impact of price declines itself is a good thing. So in the same way that we had a vicious cycle going down, we're likely to have a virtuous cycle going up. You know, that huge overhang of foreclosures gets to be less of a problem as housing prices recover.
But a couple of those fundamentals won't last forever. I mean, super low interest rates, everybody says they're going to go up at some point. Federal stimulus, well, that's got an end point to it.
That's absolutely right. The unemployment, however, will at some point start declining. Employment is already growing. The interest rate hike, which we all expect, I expect it too, although I'm on the lower side of the forecast, will only occur if we have an increase in GNP. So those two will balance.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about homes and the American housing market, whether it's bottomed out, whether it's coming back, whether it could sink again. And further, talking just days after the federal buyer's credit expired last Friday. Susan Wachter is with us from the Wharton School of Business. Joining us right now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Robert Schiller. He's professor of economics at Yale University, co-author with economist Carl Case of the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. It's the most widely cited database of housing prices in the U.S. Robert Schiller, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
I think you're sort of our bear here today. Looking back over your comments in recent months, just about a month ago, you were saying that a double dip in housing prices was still a 50-50 possibility. In other words, could go down again. What do you see out there?
Well, in a sense, it's history. We already have had declines in home prices since September. We've been down, according to S&P Case-Shiller indexes, for 5 months. Now, that is attributable to seasonal factors, you might say. I'm not so sure. So that's the puzzling thing. You know, there is a lot of optimism being expressed, and I think both James Haggerty and Susan Wachter are very reasonable economists, mm-hmm. and they might be right. I'll say that right up front. But we're going down at the moment, and, you know, this is a bad time in terms of our confidence and our economy. So I don't quite see why people are so optimistic.
Going down at the moment, what do you mean by that? We've got, I don't know, this report out today says pending sales.
I know, I was referring to the actual transaction prices.
Prices. Down how much? I thought I saw a very tiny
a
blip
bit.
Up recently, but maybe not.
It depends on what city you're looking at. In mm-hmm. terms of our latest numbers for the last month, our national 10-city index was down 0.6% in 1 month. Okay,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's like a 6 or 7% decline annualized.
Mm-hmm.
You might not think that's very much. I don't make too much of it either. But the idea that we're coming back, it sounds attractive. You know, when Susan lists those fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got her numbers, but economists have been wrong about those things in the past. And so, you know, I believe you have to kind of look at the state of confidence, where it is, and the general state that households are in right now. And it just doesn't seem to me like a recovery is the most likely, in the housing market, is the most likely scenario, except in some cities, perhaps, like San Francisco.
So is it an emotional temperature that you're taking on the country around housing, or are there fundamentals that you would point to? You wrote recently, don't bet the farm on the housing recovery. What would you point to as fundamentals for a darker view of what may lie ahead?
Well, okay, I'll go through some of what Susan listed. On employment growth, well, that
we
still have 9.7% unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And the last two recessions have been very slow for employment to recover. So we might be in a bad unemployment situation for a long time. The federal stimulus, well, of course, the Fed announced that it's stopping purchasing mortgage-backed securities at
mm-hmm.
the end of March,
mm-hmm.
and this homebuyer credit is stopping. I think the public is a little bit less happy about the idea of the government borrowing money and stimulating the economy. So all of these things don't make this. You know, I could go through her list.
Mm-hmm.
She might be right in her. All of the things she mentions have alternative interpretations.
So is there?
And underlying it mm-hmm. is just the sense of confidence. Now confidence is up, but it's still low. If the Conference Board Consumer Confidence Index is at its lowest point since 18 years ago,
mm-hmm.
it's up, but it's still low.
And what's the argument, if there is one, that the housing market could actually really chunk down strongly again? Is that the foreclosure overhang issue?
Or? Yes, there is an argument that would. I'm not saying that's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but home prices fell 30% over 3 years from 2006 to 2009. Home prices have a lot of momentum. They went up for about 10 years between 1996 and 2006. This momentum was interrupted by government intervention very clearly, and that intervention is being withdrawn. So who's to say that that same trend won't just resume itself after the support is withdrawn?
We're going to hear in a moment from a realtor in Minneapolis, an area that's not doing too badly. Let's hear from our callers as well. Bowling Green, Kentucky. Daryl, you're on the air, Daryl.
I don't believe that any reasonable investor or politician or really goes to the bank with the economist information for the most part. I think it's more just kind of indirectly valuable.
Okay, we'll write those economists up. Okay.
right. And that being said, I don't mean to take away from Ms. Susan or the rest of them, but
mm-hmm.
I think that just based on the fact that the occupancy rate alone of the United States will occupy these houses, that the value of the houses and the value of the income that are supplying these houses is going to factor itself out.
Well, let's look at that simple equation. That is interesting. We've got a big population, and it's going to get bigger. They got to live somewhere unless their incomes are falling, which they have in big sectors of the society. But Susan Wachter, what about that basic formulation?
Yeah, Daryl is right on. I mean, talk about fundamentals and basics. The most fundamental is that our population continues to grow. You know, we are, across our peers, the country with the fastest growing population, and that that really undergirds our growth. So there will be growth, and we do have vacancies. We actually have historically high vacancies in even the single home market, but that vacancy level is around 3%. So a year or two of growth will, in fact, eat into those vacancies. So the fundamentals are with us. Although I agree, I'm not that far from Bob Shiller, there's a lot of risk going forward.
But let me ask you, Susan, because one of the things that seemed to have gotten us into all the trouble was that over these decades that housing prices were going up, real incomes for an awful lot of Americans were not. They were flat or even down, maybe, which drove this sort of crazy borrowing that got us into that bubble. Now, never mind the unemployment and underemployment problem, but even for the fully employed, we don't know what's happening with incomes. I mean, if they don't go up, can housing go up?
Well, we're really not looking for a spike and a return to the housing prices of 2006. That's not in the future we're not looking at that for years. Nonetheless, what we're looking for is stabilization. And home prices, because of this incredible decline, are in many markets affordable relative to income.
Let's hear from one of the areas that has done fairly well recently. Michael Bartis is with us from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's a realtor with RE/MAX Results. It's a local franchise of the national chain out there. Mr. Bartis, thanks very much for being here.
Hello, Tom.
So what's it look like in Minneapolis? What's selling? What's not?
Well, foreclosures are selling, and short sales have really made a huge bump up here in the first quarter of this year. Traditional sales are still doing pretty well, but not as well as the foreclosure and short sale market.
Short sale meaning sort of desperation sales, people selling well below what they thought they might have not so long ago.
Exactly.
And who's buying? Was the federal credit a big deal, that $8,000 or $6,000? Did that help move properties in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it really did. The housing priced under $125,000 was definitely one of the hottest parts of our marketplace. In fact, our inventory levels can't sustain the demand.
So is that a lot of first-time buyers seeing an opportunity to get into this market?
It is, and it's also investors who are buying these properties, putting a lot of money into them, and then turning around and selling to these first-time and even second-time move-up buyers.
Why is Minneapolis among the areas you think that are doing fairly well, Hill, along with Dallas, Houston, San Francisco, Washington, Boston, with the lower rates of delinquent borrowers and inventories?
We have a very diverse economic marketplace here. Our unemployment levels aren't quite as low as some of the national averages. And because of that, the income level for people that are buying homes is generally higher in relationship to what housing they can afford. So our housing affordability index is greater here than it is in other marketplaces.
And what about on up the price ladder? You mentioned under $125,000 and a lot of first-time buyers. What about when you get into, you know, sort of the middle of the market or the higher end of the market?
The higher end of the market isn't doing quite as well, though we have seen some of the million-dollar homes actually doing fairly well in the Minneapolis Southwest Minneapolis marketplace, but the inventory levels in that area are lower, so I think a lot of people have decided to just take their houses off the market.
And what about the psychology of buyers and sellers these days? If some of those take their houses off, others are trying to think whether to get in. What are you hearing from the market, Michael, about how they're thinking about housing and the economy in the future?
We're really optimistic here. You know, a lot of times when I'm working with a client that's looking at listing their homes, their attitude might be, you know, let's dip our toe in the marketplace and just see what happens. So the expectations really aren't necessarily to sell the home right away. The average selling time here in the entry market here is about 120 days. So, you know, people are expecting that it's going to take a little bit longer to sell their home. And it's kind of a look-and-see attitude.
And what kind of career is it, do you think now, Michael? I mean, all those decades when prices went up and up and many years where they really zoomed up, that meant a lot of take-home pay for realtors. You know, is there still the same enthusiasm for the biz?
There is, but I think a lot of the realtors are feeling kind of beat up. I'll include myself in that. It's actually almost to the go-go early 2000s when you had to put in multiple offers on properties to get things to happen, and that's kind of what's happening here in the entry-level market. It's getting hard, actually, to acquire properties. There's multiple offers on every house that you put an offer in that's a foreclosure or short sale.
Michael Bartis with RE/MAX Results in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thanks very much for being with us, Michael.
Thank you, Tom.
Robert Schiller, what do you hear in the frontline report there from the realtor in Minneapolis?
Well, Minneapolis has shown virtually the same pattern of home prices as other cities. Our numbers show Minneapolis having bottomed in April of 2009. That's right exactly when they bottomed nationally. And they've been following the same track. It's really mostly a national event. Minneapolis had an unusually strong growth in home prices in the early in the summer of 2009. Since then, they've been flat, and our latest numbers shows a substantial drop. So I don't know if there's really that much different about Minneapolis compared to any other major city in the country.
But of course, I mean, you do have these national potholes, Susan. The national average for homeowners with mortgages that are at least 30 days late on payments is about 12%. Miami, you've got 28%. I mean, you get 24% in Orlando, 24% in Las Vegas. These are not Minneapolis kind of situations.
Yes, but actually, we can learn more from Michael's discussion of what happened in Minneapolis. That's consistent with what Bob has said, and it has implications for the entire country. I think what's happened, because in Minneapolis, as Bob has said, has had a recent dip, and yet we hear from Michael that there's multiple offers for short sales and for foreclosed properties. I think this is what happens at a bottom. Short sales, foreclosures are happening. They're being brought to market because the prices are such that the sellers want to bring them to market. A deal can be made. And at that point, you see more activity in the market, and you see perhaps actually sales of prices going prices going down because there's simply deals being made. In some sense, this is a sign of a bottom. And also, importantly, when the short sales and the foreclosed properties stop being such a high proportion of the share, we will see an automatic bump up in these markets. Now, back to Florida. Mm-hmm. It's a long time before we're going to see a move away from the driver of prices being short sales and foreclosures. That's going to drive prices for quite a while in these underwater markets. You know, as Bob said, this is a national event, but it's a national event which has played out very differently in the very different markets, with the sand states, so-called sand states, really being hit hard. They're in a depression.
Let's get a call from Sunbelt, Alabama. Johnny in Dothan, Alabama. Johnny, you're on the air.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm really enjoying the show. I wish I could see that crystal ball she's looking in Alabama and other parts of the United States. We're in dire straits. The state of Alabama is in proration. Unemployment is at 11%. When it comes to housing, we have a lot of homes that was developed 2 and 3 years ago. Brand new homes still empty.
Mm-hmm.
Our sales tax is down. Also, you know, most of the school systems are laying off teachers due to the fact of proration. And even some of the local governments have went to a four-day week, a work week. So I'm not so sure on what she's looking at, but I know in our little corner of the world, we're in dire straits down here.
Dire Straits doesn't sound like a comeback. Johnny, thanks for your call. Susan, what do you say?
Well, John is absolutely sorry to hear of what's happening in Alabama. And by the way, it's happening throughout the country, and some places are in worse straits than others. And it's really, in many parts of the country, it's equivalent to a depression, as I was just saying, for parts of Florida, for example. And in fact, you're absolutely right, the local and state governments, their pain is in some places just beginning to be felt in terms of layoffs, even close to us in New Jersey, teachers. This is not going to be pleasant. This is ugly. This is the only thing to be said for it. It's not the Great Depression 2.0. It's, in fact, the macro signs are that we're moving out of the recession. The recovery is likely to be slow, and it's surely not going to be without pain. We're in pain right now, and we're just saying, are we going to go into worse pain, or are we going to remain in this painful situation, bottoming here with slow improvement? So, you know, that doesn't sound so incredibly optimistic. I grant you that, but it's not saying we're going to double dip back down again.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about homes and the American housing market, whether it's bottomed out, whether it's coming back, whether it could sink again further. Robert Schiller is with us from Yale University. He's co-author of the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Susan Wachter is here from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Let's go to Brandy in Somerville, Massachusetts. Brandy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yes.
We're all talking about recovery here of the housing market, but I'm starting to wonder where exactly we're trying to recover to. This housing collapse was driven in large part by too many people trying to buy homes at way too high prices.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're trying to return to those inflated numbers, aren't we just heading back to a bad place that's going to cause us a trouble all over again?
That is a great question. And let me hold it right there, if I may. And Susan and Bob Schiller, hang on to Brandy's question. We've got more like that online here. Here's Jamie. Says, I'm 33 years old, live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I'm still renting an apartment. If anything, I was hoping for a larger collapse of housing prices in my area. As part of a couple both making a decent wage, the possibility of buying a home anywhere in the area is absurdly out of reach. And here's another on that same front from Abel, who says the simple fact is that housing prices are not affordable for average people. They're still around 30% higher than the historical average based on U.S. household incomes. Even those incomes are misleading because we're so indebted compared to previous generations. Abel says prices need to come down more for the market to be healthy. All that plus Brandy asking, where do we want this market to recover to? Robert Schiller, look at that sort of quadrant of the picture.
Well, Abel is right. Home prices are still above, in real inflation-corrected terms, you know, by something like 30%, I don't know exactly, from what they were on average over the last century. Now, there's a lot of speculative interest in homes that developed over the last 10 years or somewhat back 30 years. People think that housing is like stocks. That's a new way of thinking. The stock market has done very well. Historically, the housing market has not. The appreciation in real terms of home prices since 1890 has been less than 1% a year, according to my numbers. And if you want to use somebody else's number, according to the United States Department of Agriculture, farmland has appreciated over the last century only about 1% a year in real terms.
Mm.
It is not historically a great investment, but we think it is. And that might lead another bubble. It's exactly what Brandy was saying. It'll go up again, and it'll come all the way back down again. That's speculation. That's bubble thinking.
Susan Wachter, what about Brandy's question? Recovery to what? She's skeptical that should we want it to recover? Or is the market still so kind of integral to our economy that it has to recover for the rest of the economy to recover? There's a kind of a seesaw here. It's not clear that it works well.
Well, let's distinguish between recover to the inflated prices of 2006 with stabilization. The real concern is, do we see a dip down from here, a lurch down? And if we do, that threatens the banking system. That pulls us down in terms of the overall economy. For sure, it puts the recovery of the overall economy significantly at risk. When we use the word recovery, we're really meaning stabilization where prices are now, this bottoming up and down, different markets differently, but on a path to stability. Now, recovering to the 2006 inflated numbers, well, hopefully we will not inflate again the way we did before, but I absolutely share Bob Schiller's concern. We are in a new situation of volatility where we very well may be in some markets, although I don't see it in the near term, upward swing, then downward swing. You know, we are exceptional in the United States. Other countries do go through these swings in home prices that put households at risk. And we have been exceptional. My great concern is we're not exceptional anymore. We will see these swings unless we have attention to the underlying factors to stabilize this market, not only now, but to prevent bubbles going forward.
But if you take speculation and bubbles out of it, do you think the market has gone down enough for it to now potentially have a kind of a steady, stable life when you compare it to American incomes? Are these things balanced?
Yes,
again?
Absolutely.
But we're getting pushback from web commenters and
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Saying no.
And of course, you know, we don't live in the United States. We don't live in one market. We mm-hmm. live in our own one of 300 metro areas plus. And different markets, it is absolutely not affordable. And by the way, Jamie, I believe you're Abelwood from Cambridge, that's not an affordable market for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many markets where the question still is, how can I get into home ownership? Can I get into home ownership? But for the U.S. as a whole, we are near fair values. We're near fair values compared to rents. We're near fair values compared to incomes. What Bob Schiller is referring to is going back to housing prices corrected for inflation. of 1890. I don't think we're going back to that level.
Bob Shiller, do you agree that we are at this point in the market near fair values, whatever exactly that means, compared to rent and income?
Well, the problem is that a home buyer today has to look at the outlook for the next, 10 years? Mm-hmm. Typically, people live in a home. And the fair value of 10 years from now depends on so many factors. Historically, the real estate construction industry has had technological progress, and they make homes better and better. Mm-hmm. So that might tend to bring home prices down. In fact, that was the conventional view. So expect a decline by that view. The other thing is it depends on zoning laws and how are they enforced and how much does urbanization proceed. What does the government do with Fannie and Freddie? What will they do? They have to make a decision. How much will the government subsidize home ownership? Will they continue to allow a tax deductibility for interest rates? These are all the kinds of factors that you would really have to consider. It's not just the factors we've already mentioned. And together, it seems to me that we just don't know what home prices will be in 10 years. They could equally well be lower, even substantially lower than they are now.
Well, Chris in Greenwich, Connecticut. Chris, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I'm a realtor here in Greenwich, and I write a blog. And I've been predicting this for 3 years, and I was accused of destroying the Greenwich market until they looked around the whole country and decided not to blame me. But we're down, I would say, 30% easy, and I think it's another 20% to fall. Our low end, which in Greenwich is $1.5 million and below, is doing okay. But anything above $2.5 million is mostly sitting. And so many houses here are under foreclosure. Anyone who bought a house, I would say from 2002 onward, is underwater.
Now you are in mansion country. You're talking sort of the top of the housing market in a way in Greenwich, for heaven's sakes. But what's you think it could go down another 20%? What's your reading? Why?
Well, I'm looking right now at I'm outside a $9.9 million house that started at $13.5 million. And I'm a pretty good realtor. I'm guessing it's going to go for $7 million eventually. But even the very wealthy turn out to have been, there's a house, $36 million under foreclosure on the water. There's a lot of foreclosure here. And the people who aren't in trouble refuse to cut their prices. So the houses simply aren't sitting. The buyers are much more educated than the sellers. And, so the houses in trouble get tied up with the banks, and that slows down sales. And the houses that aren't in trouble, the owners remember 2007 prices and are convinced it'll be back up there if they can just hang on. So,
Chris, that is a real fascinating snapshot of the super high end. Susan, what do you make of that at the high end? And, of course, it matters for people who own those very expensive houses. Does the high end matter for the overall housing market?
Well, the high end clearly matters for the high end, just to keep it there for a moment. And Chris's point that the folks who are sellers are sitting on it, and they're sitting on it despite the fact that they're not selling. And I think that is an indicator that the prices have to fall further. And, in fact, we are seeing more pressure on the high end across the United States. But at the most affordable end, that's where we're seeing same stabilization.
Some stabilization. Bob Shiller, what about Greenwich? Is that could you see another 20% down in very high-end markets across the country, or is that something particular?
Absolutely.
Do not buy it.
I mean, you're not asking me for a forecast, but as could I see that? Absolutely. The market has become volatile. We are in a we may be out of a recession. We may double dip into another recession. 20% is not even a big movement by the standards of speculative markets. The prices could, it's a question of are the buyers going to be coming? And maybe they won't. Maybe the psychology won't be there. I could easily see that happening.
Let's go to Elisa in New York, Eaton, New York. Elisa, you're on the air.
Hi. Eaton is just south of Buffalo, to give you a location.
Great.
I'm a homeowner, and I just wanted to make two quick points. One of them is that I really think the formula for inflation should include housing prices. And I think if it had over the past 5 years, 10 years, you know, maybe we wouldn't have gotten ourselves into such trouble because it would have been, you know, really clear that inflation was going up. I mean, we have to live somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
And my other point is that I really don't think that housing should be looked at as an investment the way it is, single-family housing. I really think it's more like a consumable with a much longer time frame than something like a car, which is also consumable. You know, because you've got a lot of maintenance costs. You have to, you know, you have to put a new roof on your house, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. But when prices were so high, Elisa, people almost had to look at it as an investment. They were putting such a huge chunk of their family income into it.
This is true. We really don't want housing prices to go up like that. We didn't want housing prices to go up like that because we have to pay to live somewhere. So I really think that people need to look at things much differently. I think it was driven by a lot of greed. But, you know. Anyway, it'd be interesting to hear some comments.
Absolutely. Elisa, thanks for your call. Susan Wachter, what about it? Don't look at it as an investment anymore. But, of course, Americans have for a long time and for a lot of Americans in the you know, range of retirement, they were really counting on that equity as a piece of what would make retirement possible.
Absolutely. And to look at a home as a piggy bank where one can cash out and then hopefully see the home prices double and then there's no consequences of cashing out, that's over. It was unreasonable at the time, and that's clearly over, and it should be over. So not only shouldn't one look at a home as an investment where one has a short-term gain and then trades, home ownership makes sense when it's a purchase for the long run and not for the investment gains. In that respect, Bob Shiller and I are absolutely on the same point. What's very, of course, new and distressing is this volatility drives the point home even further, because one can purchase in 2006 in a very conservative loan with a loan-to-value ratio, a down payment of 20%, and still be hurt by this bubble. So it's not just a question of individuals having a change in attitude. It's really we need as a country to deal with this asset bubble, which puts homeowners, even those who are making the most conservative purchase, at risk.
Let's go to Shrewsbury, Vermont, and Bert. Bert, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you talked about the bubble is still there, exists. Isn't the government, again, setting people, new home buyers, up for failure because they maybe that $5,000 that the government's giving out in tax credit, maybe just get them into the home, but it's going to go a couple of years and they're going to realize that, you know, the only way they got that house was that money from the government, but they're still going to be in upside down eventually because of the way you say the bubble's still going.
Yeah, interesting question, Bert. Robert Shiller, what do you say?
Well, Bert has a very good point that it may not have been such a great thing to buy during this time. You got the tax credit, but home prices went up, so it kind of cancels out, and they might go back down. Getting back to this thing about we've become so trigger happy. We're thinking as investors, as speculators, really, with regard to home prices. That's a new concept. It doesn't go back before the 1970s, and it has really accelerated recently. And so we're, you know, to some extent, people have to relax a bit. And this is maybe what Susan was saying. You know, you buy a house, it should be as a place to live. And you should buy what you need to live and stop worrying so much about the exact timing of your sale and stop imagining that there are great long-term prospects.
Of course, it makes you nervous pulling the trigger if you hear Bob Shiller say it could go down. Let's hear on that front. Providence, Rhode Island. Lee, you're on the air, Lee.
Hi, Tom. So I'm following up on that last point pretty well here. I'm starting a family living on the east side of Providence. I don't want to time the market to the dead bottom. I just want a place to live, and, you know, I can live there for 10 years, the house we're looking at.
Okay.
I'm actually putting an offer in today. And, you know, my question is in an area like the east side of Providence where it's very desirable location and there's limited inventory,
yep,
maybe, you know, 10 houses a year that meet my specs are sold every year.
Yeah.
How much lower from a 2007 price where the house I want to buy was sold for $350 in 2007, how much lower, how much should it have dropped in that period? And what's a fair price now? And how do I know I'm not going to get myself in trouble for that 10-year period?
There are all the questions that are burning right now, Lee. Our time is short. But Bob Shiller, what do you say to Lee? We've just got a minute.
Yeah, it's very hard to answer that in a minute. I would say listen to your heart and look at your family. What do they need? I don't know what home prices are going to do. You're going to be there for 10 years. Nobody knows. So I think, you know, look for a good price now. Look for something that you really want, that really will help your family get on with what they have to do. And then maybe just do it.
Susan Wachter, last question, inflation. People are describing real estate again as an inflation hedge, those who anticipate inflation. Just got half a minute. What do you say to that?
Real estate is an inflation hedge, but for the long run. So I'm entirely with the feelings that have been expressed right now. You need to do what's right for your family and think for the long run.
Well, okay, it's still going to take, it sounds to me like some nerves of steel. Lee, we wish you luck with the offer you're putting down today. And to your family, we hope they find a home and live in it very happily for all those years. And for everybody else, good luck to you as well. I'm not sure there's a real clear answer out there right now, but everybody's got to live somewhere, and that's what we're all facing. Robert Schiller, it's always great to have you from Yale University joining us today from New Haven. Thanks very much for being with us, Bob.
It was a pleasure.
And Susan Wachter at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. Susan, great to have you back as well. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Listeners, good luck. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.